I'm Callie Crossley. This is Boston Public Radio. Mitt Romney is heading to Tampa today. Tropical Storm Isaac didn't get in his way, but has it put a literal damper on the protesters that are usually a supporting role for every political convention? Joining me on the phone from Tampa is Chris Ferrone, reporter for the Boston Phoenix. Chris, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. How are you doing?
I'm okay. What's the protest scene like there at the RNC?
Wet. Very wet. Though it is drying up today, it's nice out today, but I actually just filed my first story from yesterday. You know, they don't stop. There were less of them than expected. There were about 5,000 expected, and only about 500 showed yesterday. There were buses delayed even from within Florida, several from Miami and Orlando that couldn't make it, but they endured, and they were out there speak-outs, marching as close to the convention center as possible, and you know, and you have it. They were out doing it.
So I understand the whole group is calling itself, or maybe this was just one march, Coalition to March on the RNC, the Republican National Committee. Who are the folks who are protesting?
Well, I mean, this is kind of, you know, it's interesting because obviously, like you said, no matter what, there's going to be protesters at conventions. There always are. I would say that, and I'm sure I'll get some flack for this, but there really is kind of an Occupy Wall Street banner over a lot of it. Mm. You know, the central organizing site, which is Resist the RNC, is you know, definitely being, you know, run by a lot of organizers from Occupy Wall Street, Occupy Tampa. And, you know, what we're seeing are, you know, there's definitely people from Occupy Wall Street here. A bus came down, people from Occupy Chicago, all over the country. But there are also fronts like, say, the group 99 Uniting, which is affiliated in Massachusetts with Mass Uniting, which brought down a number of workers who have been laid off by Bain Capital companies like Outback Steakhouse and Dunkin' Donuts. And I also spent some time with them yesterday. They protested outside of... they protest outside of a company called Bloomin', which owns Outback and Carrabba's. These are Bain-held companies. And, yeah, they were out there about 100 strong.
All right. So numbers diminished so far. Probably will build back up as the weather rights itself today, as you're saying. And there's a broad coalition of folks with a heavy presence from Occupy, whom a lot of folks said Occupy was dead or underground forever, but apparently not the case in Tampa.
Yeah, well, I think there's something important to note is that there were thousands and thousands of people at NATO, many under the banner of Occupy. But, you know, NATO doesn't get as much attention as say, the RNC or the DNC. So a lot of the brutality and just a lot of the actions in general were ignored. Here, on the other hand, you know, there's already a spotlight. Today on the cover of the a lot of the local papers, there was a lot of coverage of the protesters yesterday, especially since the RNC was postponed. And also since they're really in the spotlight, there's definitely the police have so far at least really treated the protesters differently. The kid gloves are out. Sure, there's $50 million in so-called security measures. They have tank drones. They all have these brand new bikes. The cops are out there and they're new khaki uniforms, but they were really nice. They even a very nice police chief even came down to explain to protesters that if they wore masks, they were going to be arrested. And there was only one person who refused to take his mask off, and he was.
Let's back up just a little bit, because you mentioned the $50 million. This is something that you reported for the Phoenix last week. I didn't know that both conventions have $50 million in government funding to use for security. And you've noted a couple of ways they're using it, but outline other ways in which they're spending this money.
Well, there are 1,700 National Guard members on call. There are, you know, an event like this, Secret Service kind of really runs. They're in charge of a lot of it, and there are Secret Service agents all over the place, including ones who are really kind of just hanging in the wings in case something goes down. There's also militarized zones all around the actual Tampa Bay in the water.
What does that mean?
It means scary-looking boats, essentially. You know, in addition, the new equipment is kind of unbelievable, and I'm not looking forward to seeing what gets pulled out as more protesters come in, which they are on their way today. The mayor of Tampa is in today's paper, you know, not threatening them, but kind of just, you know, making it known that there's going to be a much bigger presence and the police are going to have to deal with that. There are horses that, I don't know if you've ever seen a horse in full riot gear, but it's an interesting sight for sure. Brand new nightsticks. I think they're about 36 inches long, which is longer than I've seen in other cities. And brand new bikes at the expense of American taxpayers. So the Tampa police should really be thanking everybody for that.
I'm speaking with Chris Verrone. He's a reporter for the Boston Phoenix. He is in Tampa at the Republican National Convention, the GOP convention, and we're talking about security measures in place. Again, back to this $50 million in government funding for both parties. So just to be clear that the Republicans get to use it this week, next week in Charlotte. The Democrats will have $50 million of their own to use. I did note that your piece said, as of Sunday, I think, the Tampa local funding kicked in. So it's actually more than $50 million being put toward whatever security measures, the ones that you've mentioned and others that might involve local police.
Oh, I'm sure that it will far exceed. I mean, for example, I did say the police have been friendly so far. That doesn't mean it hasn't been overkill. There was a late night Occupy style dance party led by Code Pink, who I'm sure a lot of listeners are aware of their anti-war efforts all across the country. And it was really just about as peaceful as it gets. I'd say about 30, 40 people literally dancing through the streets of Ybor City, which is the historic district down here. And there were, well over 100 cops following them around, and as well as choppers in the sky burning untold amounts of fuel watching people dance in the streets. So, yeah, there really is no expense that they won't go to, really, just to follow protesters around. So, you know, they haven't put their hands on them yet, but they're definitely there watching.
Well, we should note that there was a lot of preparation with regard to security well before the convention got started. I mean, months and months of planning, maybe even years or more of planning. Two things to impact how protesters would be handled. Tampa passed an ordinance requiring any group of 50 or more to secure a permit. So that right away may, in fact, curtail some numbers. And the city leased a lot a few hundred feet from the Tampa Convention Center. That sounds like it's pretty close to the convention center. So the protesters can actually be seen by the delegates, I guess.
No, they can't be seen by the delegates. It is it's not as close as the so-called free speech zone was in Boston. I guess, wow, but that's 8 years ago now. It is bigger. It is but really just kind of the location of it. And also a lot of protesters are weary, of course. It is a caged-in zone. And there are a lot of people here who have been arrested by NYPD, for example. There are protesters here from Seattle, Los Angeles, West Coast cities where the police brutality and pepper spraying and such has really been out of control. So a lot of people are nervous about these designated protest zones. And as you mentioned, you know, the authorities have put as much in place to make sure that if things really do go down, they can take whatever measures they want. So, you know, sure, they've been friendly so far, but if they need to clear the streets, they've kind of tailor engineered the rules and regulations so that they can handle it however they like.
I've also heard that journalists like yourself, Chris Verrone, of the Boston Phoenix, are a little bit concerned that if the hammer comes down, that journalists will not be able to cover any protests back and forth because they can't get behind the police lines. Is that right?
I wish it were not the case, but, you know, first I have to give a huge shout out to the Digital Media Law Project at Harvard, which put together this incredible 65-page report for journalists like me who, you know, won't just be in the hall, but who will also be outside. And along with the National Lawyers Guild, the ACLU, a number of entities have reached out to authorities in Tampa and Charlotte, you know, for months now, trying to really figure out, you know, what's going to be the case with reporters. Will credentials, you know, issued by Congress, issued by the Republican and Democratic National Committees, will they be honored outside? In regular people talk, will I be arrested if I'm wearing credentials and trying to, you know, report on what's happening in the streets? And there really has been no answer from authorities. So we're all kind of out there blind. I'd like to think that the mild temperament I've seen from Tampa police so far will carry over, even if things do get a little hectic. But really, it does come down to, you know, if reporters can be behind the lines, because we're talking about a day and age, and I'm not sure if they have it down here, but I'm sure they do. It's the long-range acoustic device, which is essentially a sound bomb. You know, you can't be right where the protesters are because you'll get hit with it. And a reporter's really no good in prison, but that doesn't mean, you know, a lot of reporters have been arrested in protest over the past year. Free Press, which is based out of Western Massachusetts, has documented a lot of these arrests. And, you know, there's a lot of things in motion to prevent it, but we have no idea. And a lot of journalists, including myself, are going out there with our attorneys' phone numbers written on our arm, just like the protesters are.
Oh, I understand from the Boston Globe today that the protesters, where they are confined, as you've described, are calling the area Romneyville.
That is one protest hub. There's also an Occupy Tampa camp that is still set up. Romneyville's been going, I'm not sure exactly how long, but, you know, definitely more than a week before the convention. So it is kind of a small little protest town at this juncture. But yes, a lot of the marches have started there. And, you know, this is, I think, at least so far, something that police are respecting, and it's there. And that's also where a lot of the independent and alternative media are based out of, you know. As more and more journalists have been getting arrested, you know, say in Chicago or New York, it's been a lot of these live streamers and people who, you know, whether they're more sympathetic to the movement or not, people who really are on the front lines. You know, this is obviously a discussion for another day, who's a journalist and who's not. We can go back and forth. But, you know, down at Romneyville, there's a lot of live streaming going on. And from there, they go through all the marches. Anybody who wants to watch everything that's going on from the front lines, there are resources like Timcast, who you can find on Twitter at Timcast, or Occupied Air. And these have grown into sophisticated operations. Mm. We're talking, some of them have up to 12 cameras on the front lines. Wow. And are broadcasting over the internet and split screens. It's pretty remarkable. So, you know, even though a lot of these protest routes and marching routes have been obviously catered so that nobody in the public actually sees the people, between social media, journalists, and you know, photographers, live streamers, the word that's really the only way the word is getting out there, because they're essentially marching through desolate streets. A lot of people aren't at work this week, obviously, particularly in the financial district, which is in the shadow of the convention center. But yeah, so it's really up to the live streamers and reporters.
All right. So the protesters will be heard. Can't let you go without noting that, because I'm still surprised by this $50 million in government funding for use for security there, that some part of the thought process about security has to also do with wanting to be safe as one can be from terrorism, and recognizing that conventions such as the Republican National Convention and next week's Democratic National Convention could be potential prime targets. So that's why some of the funding is in place as well.
Oh yeah, and I'll say, you know, it's not only protesters who are getting you know, who are really getting scrutinized by police and Secret Service. Journalists, you know, even well-known journalists are you know, have to, they're getting their dogs their bag sniffed by dogs on their way into the convention center. I mean, every security measure imaginable is in place. Obviously, some of that funding is absolutely necessary, but it's hard to not look at all the cool new toys that the Tampa police and I'm sure the Charlotte police have acquired in this process. I'm sure they will have you know, their new uniforms and bikes and toys and tank drones for years to come, thanks to Congress and thanks to the American taxpayer.
Well, Chris Ferrone, thanks to you for updating us on the protest scene in Tampa at the GOP convention. And good luck with your reporting down there.
Thank you, Callie. I just posted something on the Phoenix vlog, so people could check that out.
All righty. That's Chris Ferrone, reporter for the Boston Phoenix. Kara Miller's back in Studio 3.
Hey, Kelly, so imagine an election where partisan politics were maybe off the table, or where Congress, let's say, did not get bogged down in gridlock. Can you imagine it?
Sweden, perhaps.
So we are going to continue your political conversation with the co-founders of No Labels. They have worked in the White House, and they're hard at work now at seeing how we can turn this sort of creaky, malfunctioning political machine into something that really works. I'm Kara Miller.
I'm Callie Crossley, and you're listening to Boston Public Radio.